Hello?
Hey, Mark, it's John.
Morning, John. Did you have a good hiatus?
I did. I even went back and listened to some third series shows and our deep dive into AI. Not sure how we're going to top that with series 4.
Well, I think maybe we should change it up a little.
Drop the cold open?
No, we have to keep that.
Then do something different with the monologue and dispatches.
Absolutely not.
Well, we can't drop the famous game show.
It is the famous game show.
I know, the sponsor.
Well, a paying sponsor would be good.
Well, then what?
Poetry and free consulting.
Together?
Well, I hadn't thought of it quite that way, but maybe
poetry?
Sure, why not? You even wrote an article about it a long, long time ago.
You remember that?
No, you mentioned it when we discussed the idea earlier.
Poetry to remember data concepts. Think that'll work?
There's only one way to find out.
A data poetry slam.
With bongos, obviously.
And clicking.
Absolutely.
Well, we can try it. Now, the free consulting part I get, but isn't that just a Q&A segment?
Well, it could be, but that just wouldn't be rock bottom.
No, it wouldn't. What do you have in mind?
Data tweets. Listeners have 256 characters to ask a question, and we have 256 characters for the answer.
So it is like poetry and consulting together.
Well, you could think of it that way.
We can call ourselves the 8-bit consultants.
4 times better than those 2-bit consultants.
Hey, I have an idea.
What's that?
Do you know the British TV series Time Team? It was on for about 20 years, and just recently it's popped up again.
No, what's it about?
Each week, a group of archaeologists excavate a site in just a couple of days to uncover its history. Well, we could do something like that with data.
Like dig up a binder of old spreadsheets under the foundation of a condo development?
Well, in a sense, yeah, but instead of digging up spreadsheets, it would be like old clay tablets or something like that.
Spreadsheets before there were spreadsheets.
And there was data before it knew it was data.
We could call it archidataology.
We'll see. But we could try that for an open.
Great, let's do one.
Next time. We just finished the open for this episode.
So we did.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper.
Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Notice anything else different about this season?
Well, I noticed you brushed your hair and wore a nice shirt. You got client meetings?
No. Well, yes, I've got a meeting later this morning, but that's not why.
Well, then...
This series, we are experimenting with video.
You mean more than just a YouTube photo?
Yeah, right.
Then it's a good thing I have my radio face on.
We both have the face for radio, but we might do some touch-up with AI.
I don't know how much that'll help, but we can try.
Well, we're trying.
Yeah, that's what our listeners tell us.
I mean, we're still working on the video part, but can you imagine doom scrolling through data videos?
So don't be surprised to see the Rock Bottom Data Feed cross your social media feed sometime this season.
I can't wait. Cheerios and anthropological data conversation. Sign me up.
But in the meantime, let's get started.
You may have noticed that we use the word fuss in our titles. This is done with deliberation. I will label this reason the third theme. If you've been listening to us, you know the first theme, which is anthropology. You also have heard a theme about leadership needing to learn more. So we'll call that catchy theme two. The third and more subtle theme is stop fussing. Do we handle data in general well enough to say we can just load it into AI and go with the results? We already know the answer to that. It's no. Well, and we have to do better. But it's in this do better where the fussing starts. So before I go further, a quick lesson. All complicated systems have controls, ways of managing risk. An airplane has a checklist and procedures. A financial person has principles and audits. In data, we need all of this, and we're not good at it yet. But we treat it all like it's never been done before. We've never heard of it. So the business person says, we don't have time for this. It's abstract. The technical person says, this is really, really hard. We need lots of technology and big words. Stop. This stuff should be boring. This stuff should go away over time. A lot of folks stand to make a lot of money on this in various ways. A lot of folks are just kind of nervous and scared. And I think that's all getting in the way. Remember, at the end of this data journey, its governance, its management has disappeared. It's in the room. You can't see it. Just like anything else we deal with complicated systems. And while you're on the way to doing that, be nice to each other.
We feed the beast with messy facts, then blame it when it strays. Yet planes have lists and banks have rules to steady risky ways. Let data work grow dull and fade as wiring in the wall. And while we build that quiet trust, be kind and fuss less all. Data Poetry Slam.
It is my great pleasure to welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed a professional acquaintance and a good chum of mine. We've known each other probably an uncomfortably long time now. Stan Christensen, welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Well, with a name like that, John, obviously I gotta be here because I feel like rock bottom is a big portion of what we do sometimes in data land. But I've indeed, it's been a while since we've met each other, John, but all of those times have been good times. So
Stan is from Belgium, one of my favorite places on the planet. And we've hung out there a little bit in the past. But tell us what you're doing now, Stan, and a little bit about your organization, because that'll be relevant and feed into our discussion here today.
Of course, and indeed reporting from Brussels, Belgium, which is also where we started the company from. So for myself, as a quick introduction, Stan Christians, right? One of the co-founders of Colibra. That's 2008. That's when we started our company and we were young and naive. So we were like, why is everything so hard, right? Starting a company in that year. But we were a spin-off back then from the University of Brussels, the Free University of Brussels, to be specific. And what I've done in the company, I mean, we're talking about close to over 17 years now, almost, John. So my role has shifted as the company grew and the business evolved. But in the beginning days, I was Colibra's chief operating officer, responsible for things like pre and post sales. Then 2014, made my big leap across the ocean into New York. So I lived there for about 5 years. My role shifted to CTO. I became responsible for the product and a bunch of other things. And then in moving back from New York to Brussels, 2019, 2020, something of that nature, my role shifted to Colibra's chief data citizen today, which in other words means I run our data office, or I represent the chief data officer, but we just gave it a different name.
Yeah, very good. Now, briefly, this is not a show about products, but Stan works for a product that is related to expanding productivity and assisting us in this realm of data management, data governance, and better use of data, which is what this podcast is about. And Stan has an interesting perspective here, because you've worked on both sides of the ocean. And so I want to start with, what are you seeing out there right now, generically, not product-wise, but just data as a discipline? What are you seeing out there as the ebb and flow of working on a product side, or me on the consulting side, or Mark on the executive side, moving forward there on data management. What are the trends? What's happening? And the second part of the question is, do you see a difference between the EU and the North America aspect of this industry?
Of course. So on both of those questions, there's a whole plethora of information. I'm just going to dump them away. A little bit, if that's all right.
Sir, dump away.
But I'll tackle the first point, you know, the difference between, for example, North America and Europe. It's many. I'll give you one example. So typically, when a new technology comes to market, now it's with AI, but before it was with, you know, big data or analytics or whatever you have. Typically, technology spreads unevenly, or the future spreads unevenly. So you'll see that technology starts and gets adopted a little bit earlier than it does in North America than it does in Europe. Right. So there's a bit of a time shift, which you could argue is getting smaller as you know, the internet distributes everything more quickly, but there's still a bit of a lag. Now, we have a second differentiation is that, and this is a much more recent one, I would even argue, is that the concept of sovereignty and specifically data sovereignty has gotten increasingly more important, even in the last year alone. Right, so that's a big difference, which is creating new sorts of requirements and demands. A cloud is no longer a cloud, right? Because, you know, the cloud also sits in a data center on some land that is controlled by a sovereignty, and, you know, they want to be able to access that data, I guess, in some way. And then you also have a significantly different regulatory landscape, right? So that would also be a big differentiation. And there's many others, right, in terms of culture, for example, the American culture, how you operate versus the European culture, which really is fragmented over different countries and identities. And in that sense, also have their effect on how people do data. For example, if you look at the German versus the French landscape, there are differences in approaches to data just as well, based on that differences in culture. Now, a whole bunch of topics to unpack, I'm sure, John, but going to the first question, what do I see in terms of trends in data? Well, that sovereignty is clearly one trend, which is accelerating, but there's a number of other ones that I'm seeing. Obviously, the gorilla in the room of trends these days is AI, right? So AI comes with its own bunch of topics we can elaborate on, and data is a very important factor there, which not everybody might immediately be seeing, right? Data professionals see the connection between AI and data, but not everybody on the business side makes that same connection, I would argue, or not immediately. But there's a whole bunch of other trends that are interesting. I mean, for example, from our viewpoint, data and data governance has always been like a split land between the structured world and the unstructured world. Whereas now with AI coming to market, that dam is broken, or the genie is out of the bottle. And now the way that you can get value out of unstructured data is a lot more possible, a lot more easy, achievable than it was before. So now all of a sudden data professionals are and business executives are, how do I deal with this unstructured data problem, which almost overnight became a new requirement or a new problem? Quality is also getting important. You see a shift, for example, in governance expanding from just data governance to, well, how do we deal with AI governance? Is it the same? Is it different? Is it overlapping? Who should be responsible for it? You know, how should we do this? You know, by when should we do it? And a whole bunch of other topics, but clearly the governance requirements are evolving as well. And then data products, very hot topic, which has been bubbling for a few years. The data mesh spoke about it. MIT's data monetization framework speaks about it. Gartner speaks about it. So you can clearly see how that is a early stage trend that's positively evolving. And then I think, you know, John, two more points before I close. There's more trends, but two more. One is I see governance is achieving some level of mainstream. You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Governance was a known word, but the execution in organizations was embryonic at the same time. Whereas if you look at now, maybe it's because of AI, maybe it's because of security reasons, but governance is getting into the mainstream. It is becoming part of the business as usual. I don't want to say if it's going to take 3 years, 5 years, or 7 years, but in the next, decade ahead of us, that governance is business as usual is going to continue happening. And then the last maybe closing point there, John, is that makes me most excited. I would say that I'm seeing the early signs that the business is really starting to be serious about taking ownership around data and all the responsibilities and the process that it comes with. And the reason that I'm saying that is that I saw just this year two or three cases where senior executives, and you're talking about, executive leadership team and even CEO level, for example, of all the lines of business, including the group function, that they are actively taking on data education, which you could argue they should have all done in their MBAs 5 or 10 or 20 years ago. But that is also shifting, right? So you're seeing that executives are taking that interest. I need to school myself and my business teams on what we need to do in our organization around data, what kind of capabilities the organization needs to deal with this data problem, rather than I just need to buy the next technology widget to put more data in, right? So significantly different things, but in my mind, that business ownership is starting to materialize.
That's a pretty positive bit of feedback.
Totally. I'm very happy about it. But still a long way to go, John.
For sure.
So many paths to go down. Want to start with maybe a short one. You mentioned about data sovereignty. And I'm curious from an executive perspective, what are the concerns from the executive's perspective, concerns from the governmental's perspective of specifically where the data lives? Because it's maybe a different situation here. You know, we worry about, is the data center in Iowa? Is it in Virginia? Is it in California? It's all the same country. You know, we worry about it from the perspective of speed or co-location.
Or electricity.
But, you know, when you have so many different countries, so many different jurisdictions, then how does that become an issue, and how is it that governments and executive suites care?
Well, I would argue that even in the US, you have this phenomenon, right? Because you mentioned some reasons as to why you would choose, or I need to put my data in the data center over there as opposed to over there, which could even be the cost of electricity these days. But even in the US, you have a state by state law and regulatory system, right? So one state might be more lenient to rules and regulations as to how the data is stored and can be accessed versus another one. And that problem exists in a bigger scale in Europe and the rest of the world. So sometimes as an executive, you have no choice but to comply to your own, countries or regions' laws and regulations, right? And if the law specifies, well, if you're dealing with business applications, or whatever it is, and they're in the cloud, we need to know that that data sits in our geography on land over which we have control. And if you think about it, there's really no other guarantees that can be given to executives that nothing bad will happen against the laws of the country unless that control exists. Think about, for example, well, the police needs access to the data. Ultimately, they can go get it by being able to enter a certain data center, for example. Whereas if it sits on another across an ocean, you might never be able to get access to it, even if you follow proper channels. Or the other way around, well, if it sits in a database that's in another country, how do I know what they're doing with it? Right? So that idea that you could put the data in your ground somehow or in your region, and that will give you more control, Whether that's true or not, I mean, it's another matter, but the regulators and the governments today are very clear about it, and sometimes you have no choice. I mean, we've had to deal with it, Mark, even with our customers, where you could argue, well, it's only metadata, but from our customers, we also get, well, we want it in the cloud, but it needs to be in that re specific region because that is within our jurisdiction.
I see. Yeah, another short path I wanted to go down real quick was the executive education. So this is an extraordinarily good thing. I think there are those of us on the call that would say it's about damn time.
Yeah,
And
and you scooped me on that question too, so proceed.
so I'm
Oh, it's
curious.
fine.
I may have a different take on it, but
I'm
I'm
dying to
curious.
know. This is great stuff.
I'm curious. What education are they taking? You know, what classes, what topics, where are they going for it? Is it university based? Is it consultant based? Is it custom for that company? What are they interested in knowing?
Well, there's a few examples that I can give there, and I'm going to show my bias also. I got an MIT bias for a number of reasons, but we'll get to that. But for example, even in Belgium, right, to your point earlier, John, country of the best fries, beers, chocolate, and data governance software, of course.
I want to live there so bad.
Well, yeah, then come in the good seasons, of course, but you're always welcome. So, but if I look even in our country, there's a management school called Vlerick, which is ranking quite high on the international list. But they have education specific to data and AI that people sign up to. But then, for example, in the US, I know that there's a few CDO or chief data officer, chief data officer and analytics officer educations. I think even Carnegie Mellon has one, Berkeley might have one. So you see that it's in a number of places that this education is appearing. And then the one that I am most a fan of, I'm not saying it's necessarily the best or the only one, but like I said, I have a bias there, is that MIT data monetization course. Because for me, that's been the one that's been the most clear about not just, you know, how do you deal with data, but rather how does the organization structure itself to deal with data. What method, what framework, and specifically around not just doing things with data, but turning the data into the dollar, and prescribing how you can get that done. And it's that last one that I know I was in the Netherlands with a customer of ours, and they were the ones who earlier in the year told me, well, we had 200. You know, my ears were like, are you sure? Did I hear this correctly? 200 of their executives went through that training. So, yes, it's about that damn time.
Yeah, so you said you'd mentioned seeing a few up close. So they came back from the training. What changes did you see in them, or were you close enough to be able to see how they responded to having that training, how they interacted with the data folks, the business folks? What was different after they came back than before they left?
Well, I don't know all the people before and after, obviously, but typically you do see then changes in approach as to how they look at it, not just a technical problem, like we need to put another data lake or data warehouse or cloud, whatever in place, but we need to look at how we organize for it. Like, do we have the right organizational units in the right places with the right leadership, and do they follow the right methods? So you see that there's a change in approach, and you also see that the data topic is elevated to a more senior level. But that could also be a consequence of, you know, this AI topic pulling data forward, of course. But I think it starts with the awareness before that, you know, going to the school versus after that school. You can see that they understand better what is the organization, what are the capabilities the organization needs to put in place and master.
So connected again with the this education. So you've seen several examples, Stan. I have a couple of modules that I did for Dataversity here, and on a monthly basis, someone will download. We'll have two or three downloads a month on that. It would be nice to have more, right? Because baby needs shoes. All right. No, Anyway, and my beer budget needs a boost. Anyway, but my what I get to is, what are the basics? You know, a CEO or a CXO of some sort, they're not taught, as you said, this in their master's degree, their MBA. What are the essentials that they need to know? What have you seen, or what do you think the essentials are that they need to know? Our theme on this podcast since we started is data is anthropological, which means every human being is going to get smacked with this at some point in time. So what are you seeing that the basics are, and or what should they be?
Well, I think it's if you're saying John, the CEO, is taking an interest, I think that's already a very good start. Because typically on the floor, on the ground level, if you know the worker bees, if you make a distance to the queen bee being the CEO, the worker bees often know, right? But they're stuck with the organizational structure or the processes that exist that may inhibit it. But I think it starts with the leadership who has clarity there, and then maybe assigning somebody to be responsible. I think there has to be a strategy and all of that good stuff, and then an organization and resourcing that follows from it, and that connective tissue into the business need. And that's why I use that framework from MIT, which lines out those five components that you need, or rather the capabilities. One, it's a data platform. Obviously, you need to somewhere to put the data. Two, it's the data itself, right? And the management practices around it, which could be, starting from master data, going all the way to all sorts of data. Three, there's what they call a data science capability, which is more about not purely machine learning stuff. That's the most advanced level, but rather the skill in the organization to turn data into some sort of insight and action. Then there's the what do they call it again? Something with what you're allowed to do with data, which could be internal policies or external regulations. And
Yeah,
typically,
decision rights type stuff.
yes, and that's typically where people they say that's governance, like what you're allowed to do with data, that's governance. I think governance is the whole thing, but that's another discussion. And then last, and that's the part that I think is needed most, is that customer understanding, right? That's also a capability that the organization needs to have. It means that they're not just looking at data, which happens a lot. Oh, we have a data lake, we need to put data in there and look at it very technically, but rather, who is my internal or external customer? And what are their business problems? What are their needs? And how can I solve that with data or data products? And I think that interplay on that last point is often what's most missing. Even if you have an internal data team, doing a big data warehouse project or whatever, there might be an initial, oh, we're going to do it for this reason. But then 3 years down the line, people start questioning, why is this thing here? And what is it doing for us?
That sounds very data producty, and very big proponent of data products. Do class and workshops, and also data understanding is
Is this where you
critical.
hold up your book about data products,
Hold
Mark?
on, the in progress, the improc, like to start that, but so it's great to hear that that's becoming more mainstream. And again, my question on that is what does mainstream look like? So here we have a company that's seen the light, is going to adopt data products, recognizes that understanding the data is critical to success in AI, success in application development, success in business utilization. They're ready to do this. And what are they doing differently?
Well, so if you talk about business as usual, imagine it with, it's easier to imagine with other assets, right? Maybe the money asset or the IT asset. If you join a company, certain of those other assets, things are arranged for you. You join a company, you get a laptop, you connect to Wi-Fi, what have you, and you can start working. Similarly for money, the money asset, you have, processes and responsibilities in place, like you know how to file your expenses and do your budgeting, for example. So, business as usual when it comes to data is the same. You join a company and you open your laptop or other AI type device, whatever the future will hold, and you have data products and insights readily available for you to do your work. And if you need to do something with data that is outside of the scope of what you've been given on day one, then there is an organized process as to how you do that. Like, for example, what are the steps for requesting access to data, for example, or what are the things I have to do to reassign or claim ownership over data, for example, or how do I calculate the value of the cost of data? So when that is not a question anymore, but you enter a company and it's like part of your onboarding process almost, then we are in business as usual.
Same on both sides, the consumption side, and then also on the data product production side, that everyone knows who's responsible for the definitions, for the curation, for the maintenance of it, and that just becomes part of it. We'll continue our conversation with Stan Christians in our next episode, but now a shout out to our good friends at Dataversity. Data's moving fast. Is your team keeping up? Dataversity brings together the brightest minds in data management, governance, analytics, and AI. Level up your skills and stay ahead at dataversity.net. Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. One of our first guests back in the first series of the Rock Bottom Data Feed was Randy Bean, who shared with us the results of his 2024 AI and Data Leadership Executive Benchmark Survey. This past January, he published this year's results. There's a link to the document on our website, but two findings particularly stood out to me. The first is the speed at which companies are pursuing AI. Adoption is more than three times what it was just 2 years ago, and it's delivering more measurable business value. So when I say that AI is a priority for everybody, I mean everybody. And those 0.9% for whom AI is not a high priority? Well, I think they may have misread the question. We're past the innovators and even the early adopters and into the majority. And frankly, given the numbers now, if you haven't started, you are definitely among the laggards. The second is the challenge that companies are having culturally adopting AI. It's all about the people, and that's one of the main themes on this show. But I'm curious to drill more deeply into these cultural challenges. One of the findings, and it's not a surprise, is that AI is continuing to drive even greater interest in data. We've been saying this, and really everybody's been saying this, for several years. And now the survey shows that AI has been having an impact and driving corporate behavior when it comes to data. But this is where many cultural issues actually reside, where the resistance to managing data has become institutionalized. AI progress will be limited by data quality, and it wouldn't surprise me if companies that are rapidly pursuing AI today without making corresponding progress in data are going to hit that ceiling in the not-too-distant future. So between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to read Randy's report and benchmark your organization against those surveyed. How do you stack up? And how might your progress be limited by the state of your data? That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. The 8-Bit Consultants. Sound advice in 256 characters or less. Four times better than those 2-bit consultants. Our question? My bosses say that we don't need a data strategy. Deliver what our users ask for. How do I change their minds?
Tell your bosses, a data strategy reflects business strategy. If we anticipate using data more than for just a report, we need to understand alignment, cost, and compliance at the same time. And this is what any strategy requires.
The 8-Bit Consultants. If you have a question in 256 characters or less, leave a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice.
The fourth series is underway and it's off to a great start with Stan Christians and his observations about pushing organizations to rethink governance altogether. Lots of big shifts are happening and Stan's giving us a clear-eyed view of where things are headed. We'll be back with the rest of Stan's interview in the next episode. You know, the two-part format allows us to drill more deeply into topics while keeping the show crisp and hopefully engaging. We really do appreciate the time you spend with us. We've introduced some new features and we still have more to come. We hope you like them. Feedback is encouraged. Drop a comment and a like and a share while you're at it. And questions for the 8-bit consultants as well. And be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about Stan Christians, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a counter-threaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.